from Portland, Oregon. This is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rockney Roll. Coming up this episode, Jewish federations throughout North America, including the one that brings you this podcast, contribute annually to programs overseas that support Jewish life and Jewish people in a variety of ways. Wendy Kahn, the Chief Development Officer at the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, and Jack Birnbach, the Portland Federation's campaign co-chair, recently traveled with other fundraising leaders to Germany and Israel to see and hear about the impact of the work they help support. Their journey provided a snapshot of the past, present, and future of the Jewish world that you should absolutely hear and that I'm honored to share with you. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, presenting PDX Pathways. Portland's premier Jewish young adult networking and mentorship program is back for its seventh cohort beginning this fall, and applications are now open. Learn more and apply online at jewishportland.org. Now, here's Jack Birnbach and Wendy Kahn. Wendy Kahn, Jack Birnbach, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, tell me, each of you, tell me about your Jewish journey.
I will start. I grew up in Los Angeles, where everybody was Jewish around me. I grew up in a home that did not necessarily actively participate in everything Jewish, except for I did go to Hebrew school and celebrated Jewish holidays, and that was about it. I did not go to camp or do anything else very formal. Then I moved up to Portland, not then, like right after my bat mitzvah, in my mid-20s. And shortly thereafter, ended up meeting my husband, Stephen. And that's really where my Jewish journey takes off. With Stephen, had my first trip to Israel. We got married. We then started really getting involved within the Jewish community. He was already involved in the Jewish community. I got more involved as a volunteer, specifically with the Jewish Federation, and then on so many boards, and ultimately within my children's schools. And we made a very deliberate job of raising our children with Shabbat, having them attend PJA, going to Camp Solomon Schechter, just infusing them with Jewish values. And it was just integral to our family. And ultimately, I became a Jewish communal professional where I've sat for 18 years. And now we're here to talk about our trip to Israel, which has been now my 10th trip to Israel. So it's been a long trip and journey to this moment.
Jack, can you tell us about your Jewish journey?
Sure. I'm a Portland native. Went to Hebrew school here, and I went to Sunday school here, was a Camp Solomon Schechter participant. Matter of fact, my friends today are still my old camp buddies. We get together all the time. People who stood up in my wedding later on were my camp buddies. So I'm a big fan of Jewish camping. I was in USY. Actually, I didn't even want to join USY. My mother made me join and paid my dues. But I ended up being their president here in town and on a national board. Again, didn't think about doing that. It just happened. When I went to college, both at the University of Denver and Arizona State, at DU, I ended up being president of Hillel there. When I went to Arizona State, I wasn't the president, but I participated enthusiastically. I met my wife at the Jewish Community Center in Denver. So I think just having a Jewish background really helped me cement what I was looking for in a life partner. And Melanie and I, my wife, often talk about our Jewish backgrounds that form our values that have kept our marriage going and be 47 years this Thanksgiving weekend.
Hey, Mazel tov.
Thank you. But I didn't really participate at all during my career in anything. I just worked, which I think might be a big mistake because when I retired, somebody from Jewish Federation asked me, look, Jack, you're a CPA. We need somebody on our finance committee. Will you participate? And I said, sure. Don't know anything about nonprofit accounting, but I bought a book from the Oregon Nonprofit Association and on accounting for and managing and running nonprofits and read that thing, 800 or 900 pages, and learned a lot. And then that helped me participate more in the finance committee. And then I think I had the role of treasurer twice, maybe because of my knowledge on that. And then allocations. I was on allocations for 8 years. And I think three of those years was as the chair. And so actually Wendy asked me and Leslie Beard to do the campaign, to be campaign co-chairs last year. And so Wendy and I just got back from Israel and from Germany. There's supposed to be an annual trip for campaign chairs and campaign professionals like Wendy every year. And so I was thrilled that I was able to do this. And I went on this trip, which I know this podcast is about, really to learn more about what was going on in our country, in the U.S., because the people that went were people like Wendy and I, were volunteers like myself and professionals like Wendy.
And this was your second trip to Israel?
Yes, I went in 1986. So
it's been a minute.
It's been a minute or two, yeah.
Starting off, you guys started in Berlin, as I recall. What did you see in Berlin? What did you experience in Berlin and Germany that really stuck with you?
We started at Platform 17 Memorial, which were train tracks that each piece of the train track had a number on it, and the number represented the number of individuals and families but who were then put onto the trains from that site.
To go to the camps.
To go to the camps, yes. And as you see the numbers, they're large numbers, and it's a couple hundred, and they wrap around both sides of the tracks. And then you see, like, the very end number is 18. And the date, and they're also dated. And the last number on the was number 18, the war is virtually over, and yet it speaks to the determination of the Nazis to make sure that every last Jew is still going to be exterminated. And these tracks are in the middle of a neighborhood where there are people who can witness all of this horror, and yet they're there. And that's where we started our journey. So that was pretty remarkable for where we started, not where we ended, which was also remarkable. And Jack, I don't know if you want to share.
So in Germany, we have relationships there with the Joint Distribution Committee. And when the war in Ukraine started, they were ready, because they were already in place, they were ready. They set up 18 sites, I think, outside of Ukraine. And most of the people that came to those sites were Ukrainian children, Jewish children, and Jewish women. The men maybe dropped them off, but they went back and they fought. And I also think that there were Jewish Russian people who came out and ended up being helped by the JDC, the Joint Distribution Committee. And so we got to meet some of those folks and some of the programs that they were involved in. And, you know, you sit there in Portland, Oregon, or wherever you're from, and you say, gosh, you know, how can I help? What can I do? My heart goes out to these people, and I just want people to know that we have infrastructure in place because we can help these people. I think they told us the war started on February 22nd, and they said by February 24th, they had 18 sites already set up. So our funds are being used wisely and intelligently, and people act very quickly. So that was impressive.
And I think to add to that, what we saw were, in particular, we were able to meet some of the youth who had been helped by our funding. And it was quite a glorious afternoon, because these young children, teenagers, were taken, you know, into these programs from Ukraine inside of Germany, and they are now participating in these after-school youth programs, and they're singing and dancing and making friends and taken from this war-torn environment and being given hope and community, and we're helping create that where they had only destruction and war and nothing. any longer. And when we sat down with them, each of these teens shared what their hopes were for their future. We have helped move them from hopelessness and helplessness to being hopeful and thinking that they do have a future. And there was nothing better than that in those moments, to be feeling like we had a part of that.
That's beautiful. So then from Berlin, it was off to Israel. What was it like coming into Ben-Gurion Airport?
It used to be that you got off the plane, and oftentimes you would get off the plane and you would like kiss the ground and be so happy that you landed there. Mm-hmm. Now you get off the plane and you are greeted, for lack of a better word, of a big mural of all the hostages. And then as you walk down the path to the baggage claim, it is just one sign after another sign of each of the hostages, many of the faces that we've all become familiar with. But there are notes on these signs with hearts and signs for love and care. And then also there are birth dates that are signed, you know, age 18, now 19, 25, now 26. And it's just step after step after step as you're heading down to get your baggage. That's your first sight. It was not our last time that we saw that. It is everywhere throughout Israel. That's what you see.
So it's still the country's focus is still on getting those hostages back.
Very much so.
So you went to a lot of places and spoke to a lot of folks. What were the conversations and experiences that stuck with you then and now?
Well, we went down to one of the kibbutzes that were destroyed. Near Oz is the name of the kibbutz. One of the things that they told us was that there were different waves of Hamas terrorists that came through. The first wave was there to kind of destroy the place. And then they called their, if you will, the regular citizens of Gaza to come by. And what they did was they did two things. They took everything that wasn't nailed down, so to speak. And then they took hostages. And they brought those hostages back to Gaza. And one of the hostages who was able to be released said that when they got to the tunnel in Gaza, the hostage takers and the Hamas people that were in the tunnels started arguing with each other about how much they were going to pay for the hostages. And in some cases, they weren't going to pay enough. So the hostage takers just took them back to their homes. And I just thought that was, you know, just how terrible is that? Mm-hmm. You know, just it was just heartbreaking.
That same day, we went to the site of the Nova Festival. And what we also learned was that the Nova Festival was not on the plan. That, Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong in how I'm stating this, but it was, Hamas was planning on going to an army base nearby the Nova Festival and happened upon this festival. This peace-loving festival where all these kids were, they happened upon it and
They just viewed it as a target of opportunity.
Yeah.
And today, that site is filled with posters of people who died there, and perhaps, I think, even where they were shot. One of the things that struck us was there's a dad of one of the fallen victims who comes there quite often. And he speaks to people who come to visit the site, and I think inform the visitors what happened. And I think it helps the visitors understand the lives of the people who died there. But I think it also helped him honor his, I think it was his son.
It is his son.
Yeah, who perished there that day. It also happened to be, I think, a staging area for the Israeli army that was scheduled to go into Gaza. And I noticed a lot of the visitors to the site going up to soldiers shaking their hands and thanking them for what they've done and what they're going to do to help, hopefully, free hostages.
So you both witnessed the remnants, the reminders of a lot of death and destruction visiting these places and speaking with people. What were the experiences that left you with a sense of hope or a sense of pride in the Jewish people in Israel, in that society?
We went to Beersheba, where there's a trauma hospital. It's called the Soroka Medical Center. The crime started around 6:30 in the morning or so. The night shift of that hospital gets off at 7, and the director just said, "Hey, can you stay?" And everybody said, "Oh, yeah, we're staying." This was, you know, essentially 30 minutes or less after this thing started. And the staff of the hospital, whether they were scheduled or not, showed up. That included the outsourced cleaning crew who showed up. And that hospital was designed to handle 300 cases a day. But because everybody just showed up and found something to do, they handled well over 600 cases that day. They had intelligently figured out that landing helicopters on the roof was not a good idea, and they had created, literally in their front yard, helicopter landing spots so they could get patients in and out very quickly. It was a logistical miracle, that all the things that they did. And as a result, I think there are three major trauma hospitals in Israel. Mm-hmm. This was one of them. They started sharing everything they learned with the others almost immediately. So I felt real proud of our people being able to respond so vigorously and enthusiastically, even in the midst of just terror, you know.
I would also add that we were able to add, through the funding partners that we had before and that we have been talking about, that we were in these locations through, you know, whether in Europe through the JDC, in Israel through JAFI, through all the relationships that have been built, we have all of these relationships, and they were amplified during this time. The list of funding partners are huge, and the strength and the resilience that we have seen through our visit was so visible and apparent because of what we saw with Soroka, what we heard from different speakers of victims of terror, from site visit to site visit, that they were able to respond because we were able to fill the gaps. So that what they did was they identified the gaps, and then they were able to get the experts, and we were able to connect with those experts. And by doing such, we were able to ensure that Israel could respond and remain together and be strong.
That response did nothing less than save the country.
Yeah, it did, because they are still so filled with grief, as you said, but they are such a resilient people. And so my answer to add to that is, on Shabbat, I took a very long walk, as I always do when I'm there. I walk all the time when I'm in Israel, and on Shabbat in particular. And you're thinking about, how do people respond to all of this grief, and how do you carry all of this? And I would say, you know, as we do in many of our ceremonies where we break the glass, you know, at a wedding, we have to carry sadness and joy at the same time, and that's just part of our tradition. You see that when you see people on the beach and enjoying the sun. But as I'm walking on the beach and taking my long walk, helicopters are going overhead, and planes are flying in the air. You cannot forget these moments, and the hostage posters are there every step of the way. So I think that the strength and courage continues, because you've got to live each day, and then you also have to remember all that is surrounding you.
It's not just a part of Jewish tradition, that carrying of joy and sadness together. It's everyday reality living in Israel.
Correct.
Jewish federations in North America have 25 full-time employees in Israel, and have for 21 years. So that infrastructure, when we raised funds here in Portland and throughout the nation, they had the contacts to deal with the gaps that Wendy was talking about. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just throwing money randomly. They had already established through years of work to have partners that they knew would be trustworthy with the funds. I felt like, wow, my contributions here are going and being used appropriately and effectively and immediately. And to that point, they were able to help fund, you know, these people who were homeless after the attacks, mm-hmm. and to give them some money and some services as well.
So this trip with the two of you, we were also there with campaign leaders, both professional staff and volunteers from around the country. What's it like traveling abroad with 60 of your fellow campaign leaders from Jewish federations around the country?
I am telling you, Rockney, it was awesome. These people were the nicest, friendliest, most wonderful people that I have ever, I mean ever, been around. These are terrific people. There were a couple of occasions where I might have been sitting by myself eating, mm-hmm. and they would either sit down with me or ask me to join them. People would just come up and say, I haven't met you yet. I'd love to get to know you. And they embody what I think is important in, you know, the mission that we're involved with here, and that is supporting the Jewish people. They understand that forming relationships so that we can share ideas, get to know each other, and be able to call upon each other throughout the year. These are awesome people. And I want to say, because I'm retired, Rockney, these are people in their 40s and 50s for the most part who are full-time employees someplace. They have families, they have spouses, and yet they make the time to go on this mission and raise money. It's fantastic being around those people.
So everyone loved Jack. He was very popular.
No one is surprised to hear that. Literally no one.
So he was a fantastic travel partner, and I want to go on record thanking Jack for coming along, being my travel partner. He was fantastic. And national trips are just a phenomenal opportunity, because to add to everything that Jack said, being around individuals who believe like you do, but you might not think, you know, somebody in, you know, Austin or Montreal or whatever might have the same thoughts as you, bigger city, smaller city, different, whatever. We're all coming at this the same way, and we sometimes feel so isolated in Portland, and then you come together and you find out, I don't know, we're the same age, we have the same family, we came at this work the same way, everything is the same. And we're all trying to get to the same place. We want this, we have the same values, we want the same for our families, the same for the Jewish people, and we want to bring others along with us. And we're hoping that our community will understand and will want to participate to their highest, best level, and that we can share our journey with them. It's an honor to have had this privilege to be able to do this and share it with these other folks. And we look forward to sharing with them. We've got this live WhatsApp group that is lively, and just, Jack, I think you keep talking on it every day.
So these are relationships that are continuing, yes, past just this week-long trip.
I think personally and professionally. They've become resources for me professionally, and I've made some friends, and I think
You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I mean, a lot of people are doing just different things, and one of the great things about going with Wendy was we did a lot of brainstorming on what we could do to be helpful in our own community, just seeing what other people are doing and saying, here are things we can do now, and here are things we can do in the future. So we put together quite a list, and we're going to share that hopefully soon with others.
I'm looking forward to it. So you got to see and hear, we touched on some of this work already, you got to see and hear about a lot of the work that federations, overseas projects support in Israel. What should people know about that, and in other places as well, not just Israel? What should people know about that work and why it's so important?
Well, the first thing is, I think I've maybe alluded to that before, is that we have people in place both in Israel and around the world to help people, Jewish people in need. So we're investing every year in that so that we can be prepared. We can have relationships built so that we're not reactionary and we're effective. You know, you don't want to throw, as I said before, you don't want to throw money at something. Mm-hmm. You want to fund something where you know people, and you can't really know people if you don't have a relationship with them and you haven't built that up through the years. And so that's where I feel like my contributions and our community's contributions are being well used. It's through the fact that we build up that infrastructure.
And then I think it speaks to the why as well, and why do we do this work? So many people talk about the fact that they do this for our families, for our community, to have a community that will continue to exist into the future. So to perpetuate that and propel that forward, we are in this together. And so there's the power of each one of us to make a difference and to know that when we are making those contributions and investing in these programs, and we have trusted partners and trust in our community to help make those relationships stronger. But then when we each invest and take that time, whether we're in our 40s and 50s or in our 30s or in our 60s and 70s, each stage makes a difference and makes a contribution and helps build that connective tissue for that community that will help us always be in a position to have that unparalleled response, but also build that bridge to the future so that we will always be here and be ready, because we found that we're all so similar. I think that that's what you want to continue to invest in, is that knowledge that it's not only the specific programs, but it's also that we're investing in these people, those smiling faces of those Ukrainian children and those children and individuals that we met in Israel, that they know that we're behind them and we've got their backs and we will have them in the future.
You know, Rockne, one of the things that I enjoyed was that we had many discussions, and the participation, the insightful participation of the people in their 40s and 50s was fantastic. And as a retired person, I'm thinking, wow, the Jewish people are in great hands here in North America. We've got terrific people, younger people coming up, and they're every bit as good, if not better, than you can imagine. They're just fantastic.
Fabulous. Going back to what we were talking about, the infrastructure that overseas projects money puts in place, obviously federations do great at emergency campaigns. Our Israel emergency campaign was wildly successful. The emergency campaign for Ukraine, fundraising for hurricane relief, for wildfires in Maui years ago. And it strikes me that when it comes to overseas projects supporting Jews around the world, that the infrastructure that we build now makes those emergency campaigns all the more successful and important, because we get, you get so much juice out of that squeeze.
Yeah, again, it goes back to, you don't want to have to be reactionary and panic. You've already got relationships in place, and you want to have good answers. So we have good answers because we've built this over decades.
Which is the annual campaign, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the picture that sits in your fridge and that you can rely on, that you want to know that you've got that. And we've got those relationships here every day, every year that we're here all the time. So that when you do, so it's not only the relationships that you have with those agency partners to know like where to fill in those gaps, but it's also that we've got the relationships with our community members, right? And so we want to continue to build and grow and foster the relationships that we have with everybody and bring everybody in to this work and have them understand the ongoing value and importance. Like, we can't just stop. One year ends and another one begins, because every year there's something different and new. And then we never know what's going to change, whether it's been the pandemic or, Ukraine, or like you said, you know, the fires. It's a both and all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a mix.
Wendy Kahn, Jack Birnbach, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. Thank you so much to my colleague, Wendy Kahn, and to our campaign co-chair, Jack Birnbach, for bringing the stories of Israel and Jewish communities overseas home to Portland. The work they witnessed goes on, and it's only possible through the generosity of donors to Federation annual campaigns like the one here in Portland. The Federation's annual campaign for community needs supports an immense panoply of work to sustain and improve Jewish life throughout the world and right here in Portland, including the Jewish Review newspaper and this podcast. Learn more and to make your contribution to life-changing and life-saving work, visit jewishportland.org/give. This episode also marks the end of our first season. With nearly 2,500 downloads and counting, the inaugural season of the Jewish Review podcast has been an immense success. That wouldn't have been possible without a lot of people who deserve a lot of appreciation. First on that list are our guests this season. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your time and gifts with our audience. A particular thank you goes out to Julie Platt, JFNA's board chair and our very first guest, for stepping out into the digital unknown with us. Next are my colleagues at the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland who have helped make this endeavor possible behind the scenes, particularly Mark Blattner, who has supported and championed this podcast from idea to upload, Karone Blau-Rothstein, our indispensable associate editor, Rachel Nelson, who has helped connect me with many of the folks you've heard from this season, and Daniel Berger, who gets an extra special season-ending thank you for all of his work to promote and grow this show. And of course, a tremendous thank you to each and every one of you who has listened, liked, reviewed, and told your friends about this show. Building a podcast is grassroots work, so thank you for being an integral part of this season's accomplishments. The Jewish Review Podcast will be on vacation through August, but we'll be back in September to ramp up for the high holidays and kick off an exciting season two. Until then, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, happy summer and all the best.